gonna race you to the fence. I'm gonna chase you round the block, round the block. I'm gonna chase you round the block. Come on, jump out the door. You can't hold it back no more. I'll show you how the birds learn how to fly. I'm gonna take you on a ride, on a ride. I'm gonna take you on a ride. I'm gonna race you to the sky, to the sky. I'm gonna race you to the sky. Come on, jump out the door. You can't hold it down no more. I'll show you how the birds learn how to fly. Don't mind leaving your nest. Don't mind making a mess. This might be the best day of your life. Get there real soon, real soon. Hold your breath, I bet we get there soon. Come on, jump out the door. You can't hold it back no more. I'll show you how the birds learn how to fly. Don't mind leaving your nest. Don't mind making a mess. This might be the best day of your life.
This is Art on the Airwaves with Cami Davis on KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon. Well, I'm really excited about my guest today. What to me is one of the best voices in the Valley is here with us, and that is Sean Siders. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Oh, thank you so much, Cami.
It's so good to have you here. Last time that you were on Art on the Airwaves, you were here with a couple other guys from the Seance.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. you're here today to talk about your new CD, which, when did it hit? Was it yesterday?
On Saturday we released it in Medford, Oregon at the Imperial Ballroom.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And there was a really cool crowd that day. Everyone was really involved and excited to hear the new music. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. You guys have quite a following, not just in this area, but you guys travel around a little bit too, don't you?
Yeah. We actually, just before we released it on the 13th, we did a 5-week tour around the U.S.
Ooh, and, where'd you go?
All over the place. We did a big old circle.
What was your favorite place?
Oh, man. My favorite is too hard to just decide off the top of my head. Uh-huh. But one of my favorite places was New York City.
Ooh, I've never been there.
Yeah, I love the level of stress you just kind of feel while you're there.
Oh, my God.
You just feel like you're swimming in in this focus that, I don't know, you don't really feel that while you're here in the Rogue Valley,
yeah,
where we're all relaxed and everything.
Yeah, right.
So it's a different pace. Not my favorite pace, but it challenged me in a unique way when we were in that city. So, yeah. I really like New York City.
Tell me you took the time or had time to go to at least one art museum.
I'm sorry,
Sean,
Cami.
Next time you go, I'm sending you on a mission. I want some pictures from the art museums because that is one of my dreams. I'm going there someday.
Yeah, make me a list.
Yeah, I will. I love that. So your new CD is called Aprilis?
It's Aprilis.
Aprilis. What does that stand for? I've never seen that word before.
You probably haven't. It's not commonly used anymore. It's a Latin word, and Hopefully I'm doing this correctly. If there are any Latin experts out there, they might be blowing their brains out right now. But to a certain extent, it just represents the month April. That's what it means when they used to say it, Aprilis. And it represents what we know as spring and how life begins anew for a lot of things in the earth and outside of the earth. It's always like a refreshing point of the earth. And that is ultimately the concept of the album, which takes a role in the post-apocalyptic time of the world. And, you know, as we're getting into all the chaos of a world ending and dying, there's that last shred of hope for it to have a rebirth after everything is burned down to the ground. And I mean, that's just kind of the nature of existence. It feels that, you know, eventually you, you know, after things have completely been destroyed, there's always hope. And that's what Aprilis means to me and Sion's. And that's what we were trying to put out there.
Is hope?
Yes. Yeah.
The birth of something new. I love
Absolutely,
that. Yeah. I was with you till the post-apocalyptics and stuff. It sounds so deep. Whose idea was that to whose concept?
It popped into my head.
Mm-hmm. So this is from your twisted brain, Sean. That's what you're telling me.
Well, here's the deal. I'm a big fan of Bob Moog. He's a maker of synthesizers, one of the first pioneers of analog synthesizers. And one thing he always used to say is he couldn't take credit for his ideas. They would just come into his head from the universe, from God, whatever you call it. He had this humble way of saying that he just connected himself to the thoughts that were already there, and he was just an antenna that was pulling these thoughts out of the sky, sort of thing. And I like to think that that's what it was. You know, like, I was just the little antenna out of the band that was picking up most of the ideas. And, yeah, it was telling me post-apocalyptic, start writing about humanity, start writing about tragedy.
Yeah.
And I just kept going until we created what we did.
I love it. And I did, you dropped it off at the KSKQ studios a few weeks ago, and I did have a chance to listen to it. And cool. I think it's, it is amazing. And I love the idea of birth and renewing yourself and hope. And I think that's so cool. How long did it take you guys to make the CD, to write it and make it?
Well, it started, I was just thinking about it, actually. It took about 6 years up to when I wrote the first song until now. It's been about 6 years.
Wait, 6 years? You're like 24. You were a baby. You were like 18.
I was, it was right when I started at SOU, actually. I was in college, and I went to the piano rooms, the piano practice rooms they have there in the music building, and I just started playing piano a little bit, and that's when I learned how to play piano as well. So I was writing as I learned, and eventually the concept came to me, and I had the songs for about 3 years before we even decided we wanted to record them. So they went through so many different changes before we decided on the final sound for the recordings.
And I wanted to ask you, because I've had you on the show before and I've listened to your music, and I wanted to ask you if there was a spiritual side to it, because there's something, I was raised in the Nazarene faith by my parents, and so there was something that was very spiritual that was coming out to me when I was listening to some of your words, some of the phrases I was picking up on.
Yeah.
Do you mind me asking you about that, or can you tell me if what that background is?
Yeah, it's absolutely fine. I think we all have spirituality, and we interpret it in different ways, and we express it in so many different ways, and it's just beautiful how many options there are. And really, that's what I try to embrace whenever I write about something spiritual. I don't really try to advertise any specific religion or anything like that, but I always encourage people to have a strong spirituality. Because
I love
it's important in humanity to believe in things beyond the physical world. Yeah. It really is.
I love that. And I think that's one of the things that draws me to your music and your words, is that you're not hitting people over the head with it, but you're being true to yourself is what I take in listening to it. So I think that's amazing. Yeah. So did you get a degree from SOU in music? Is that what you studied?
I studied music. I did music theory, some ear training classes that were actually really fun.
I think I need those for doing the controls here.
Yeah, they do engineering classes as well. I didn't actually take any when I was at SU. Oh. But yeah, I never really decided on a degree. I just took 2 years there, mm-hmm. and I did mostly percussive studies with Terry Longshore, who I think is running the entire music thing they're doing over there. I'm not entirely sure on that. Mm. Haven't been keeping up to date on it. But he was the percussion director when I was there. And, yeah, I mostly worked under him and just enjoyed every second of it. But, yeah, no degree intended. Mm-hmm. Just
so what is your future? Are you planning – what are you planning, like, with Sions? And, yeah, what is your future in music?
Well – hopefully we're just going to keep doing what we do best. Mm-hmm. I'm already thinking about what we're going to do next, what recordings we're going to do. And, we're getting really excited, talking about our favorite bands. You know, we've been listening to a lot of Radiohead. We've been listening to, one of my favorite bands right now. Sun Luke's is a big one.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Yeah. They're very cool. Yeah, I mean, we all have our own favorite bands that we listen to, and we yeah. take influence from them. So we're excited to just keep doing that and do some more traveling as well. That was our first U.S. tour a week back when we just got back from that 5-week tour. So we want to keep doing that as well.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Very, very cool. So Sean is going to play us a live song, which I'm really excited about. And now I have to ask you were saying that you took a lot of percussion, but you showed up with a keyboard today. So do you do multi-instruments? What's that about? You can play a lot of different things?
Well, yeah, the cool thing about percussion is I think it's one of the more diverse studies in music. Piano is almost a percussion instrument in itself. Of course, there's other elements to it, but it's probably the closest to percussion you can get without it being percussion, in my opinion.
I mean, interesting. I had no idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, just rhythms and you're always thinking about rhythms. And, I mean, marimba is a percussion instrument, which is basically a piano, you know, xylophones and bells. So they kind of lend themselves to each other. But, yeah, I mean, I've just always been passionate about learning new instruments and finding how they resonate with me, like, differently to other instruments.
Oh, wow.
And piano is just really special to me for this album of Aprilis. That's definitely my focus instrument.
Very cool. Are you going to play one of the songs off of Aprilis today, or are you singing something different? Okay, which one are you going to sing? And then I need to ask you, because Sean's jetting out of here. He's one of those artist that has a day job, like so many of us, and so he's going to jet out of here after playing a live song for us. And so then I'm going to play two other songs off of your CD. Which two do you think I should play?
I would recommend, for the sake of ease, you could do "Sleeping Saviors" to "Tick and Twirl." If you were going to play them back to back, because they're right next to each other, and I think they express the dynamic of the band in very different ways. One of them's kind of heavier, and that first one is a little bit softer. It experiences the lighter sound of what we're trying to do. So
okay, so those are the two songs I'm going to play a little bit later in the show. And I want to make sure, because you're going to be jetting out of here when you're done playing, I want to make sure that we let people know where they can purchase your CD and what your website is.
Okay, that's an easy one. As long as you know how to spell our name, it's seons.com, and here comes the spelling for that name. It's S-E-A-O-N-S.
It's Seasons without the middle S.
Yeah, exactly. Seasons without the middle S. We're definitely not called Seasons.
No. I just remember how to spell it because of that. That's right. The only reference.
No, that yeah. I think everyone remembers how to spell it like that. That's for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's a not good just tool. Me.
No, you're not alone there. But we get common confusion, you know, people forget and they're like, oh, the Seasons.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then everyone gets really confused.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny.
So it's seons.com.
Seons.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then where do they find? And then you can find you on Facebook because I follow you guys on Facebook. And it's yeah. Seons that you look for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And I mean, you can, as soon as you go right to our website, there's all those nifty little social buttons.
Oh,
you'll
cool.
see them right on the front page.
That makes it
and
easy.
And they'll take you to our Instagram, our Twitter, YouTube channel.
I don't know if I follow you
stuff.
On Instagram. I got to go do that. Okay, very good. And then where can they buy your CD? Is it on your website?
Yep. Yeah, you'll Perfect. See a little store button, and you can go in there. We just printed some great T-shirts with Tim Stickrod, a local screen printer who's actually really talented. He's in a band called Fox Hollow and Everett. Go check that out.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you for coming in today. And what song are you going to sing for us?
I'm going to sing a song called Rain, and this is the piano arrangement. We're hoping to actually record this version at some point.
Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. Here's Sean Siders with the Seons.
Oh,
so beautiful. That was Sean Siders from The CN. Sean, that was my favorite song, by the way, on your CD. I don't know if I ever told you which one I liked the most, but that was, and you chose it to sing. And in person, like, your voice just blows me away. I kept having to turn the microphone down a little bit. I hope audially I did you justice, because you have such a good voice. I love the sound of it. So thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure having you stop in today. And remember, their website is seons.com.
Yep. Thank you, Cammie.
Thanks, Sean. So now we're going to turn to my other guest for today, who is an artist. And when I first moved to this area from Seattle, I had contacted anything that had the word art gallery on it in the area. And one of those was Elan Guest Suites and Gallery. And I walked in, and this really nice lady, Cherie Renaud, was showing me her guest suites. And she said to me, "Oh, my son is an artist." And I was kind of cringing, because I was in that, you know, I just moved from the big city. There's not going to be any good art in this area space. And she showed me her son's art, and my jaw dropped. And that artist was Gabriel Mark Lipper. Gabriel, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You can put that up a little bit if you want. We're adjusting microphones. Poor Sean's moving his keyboard out while I'm interviewing Gabriel. But Gabriel, yeah, I was blown away. So it right from the start, it completely changed my take on Southern Oregon artists. And of course, since I got here, I have definitely learned the truth that we have amazing artists here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So welcome to Art on the Airwaves. This is the first time you've been on, and I've been dying to have you on for a while. I think I've been asking you to come on for a while.
Yeah. I think we had this date set a way back. So
yeah. Poor Gabriel. I saw him at an event, and I basically accosted him, and here he is. So let's tell the listeners who aren't familiar with you a little bit about your art. How would you describe your art?
Well, I paint in oil, and it's generally fairly representational with a lot of focus on color. And I guess a thing that a lot of my work kind of, I guess, a chord that runs through the work is that there's a lot of narrative behind the work that I do.
There's like a story for your paintings when you're painting them?
Vague, and I like to kind of leave it open to the viewer to kind of project their own responses mm-hmm. to what I'm doing. But I like to juxtapose different, usually figures, with each other, so there's some kind of a questionable dynamic, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting. Let's go back in time. When did you first realize you were going to be an artist or a painter?
Well, I grew up drawing. You know, that was pretty much what I did exclusively as a kid.
Was it, did your mom or dad pass that down to you, or somebody in your family, or was it just something that you went, "Oh, I want to draw"?
I mean, I've always been, it's been encouraged, definitely. Mm-hmm. Both my mom and dad were very artistic, and I think it just, you know, I always had pencils and paper in front of me, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there was never any doubt. I grew up, the first 11 years, pretty much an only child, and TV was limited.
Oh, so, see, that's smart. My parents raised us without television. Yeah. Now they have television. The minute we grew up, they got a television. But right. Yeah, they raised us without TV, and I think that's mm-hmm. really smart, because you have to, as kids, you have to, like, you know, come up with your own entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, create your daily activities, and so for me, that was a lot of, you know, coloring and drawing.
Yeah. And were you, like, in school, were you above the rest of the kids in arts and crafts, or you know, was it something that was always going to be what you did, or
there was definitely some years when I was in denial. I mean, the 80s, I was pretty sure I was going to be a stockbroker.
From stockbroker to artist.
Right. I think that was just the 80s. It was either that or, I mean.
That was the thing to do in the 80s,
right.
Wasn't it? Wall Street and all those.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it was pretty clear early on, I think, to everybody but me, and then I embraced it in high school. I've been, I was always the one drawing.
In high school. Now, did you go to college for it? I don't.
I did 2 years with a man named Simeon Bilmes, who used to live in this valley, and I was looking at Parsons School of Design in New York, and he was a graduate, mm-hmm. and so it kind of brought me full circle. At the time, I went to high school in Portland, and that brought me back down here to study with him for a couple of years.
Is that how you, because your mom lives here too, so I didn't know if you had been raised here in Southern Oregon, or how did you
end up? I went to Walker Elementary here in Ashland.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So this is where you grew up.
This is my home. I mean, Portland and here, middle school, high school up there.
And then you moved back down here later on to study with him and ended up staying here.
Yeah, that was kind of maybe an ironic twist of fate, but it's obviously where, you know, family is, so it's makes it easy.
Yeah, definitely. I know that makes a big difference where family is. Do you plan to stay here long term?
Well, I've been here since 93, so that's pretty well. That's a while.
That's kind of long term. Now, you were someplace during the summer. I know I follow you on Facebook, and it was like a picture of you out painting in this idyllic countryside in, I don't know, France? Where were you at?
I was in, I took a painting trip through Italy. I started in Rome and then went up through Tuscany and painted in Tuscany. And then finally finished up in Munich. For the Oktoberfest with a couple of friends.
Wow. I've never traveled anywhere, so I was looking at that picture thinking, I want Gabriel's life. Someday I want Gabriel's life.
That's definitely one of the perks that I managed to somehow work into my career. Mm-hmm. I go on painting trips, and I really enjoy that, and I think it's feeding my creative process in a way that not much can.
Yeah, I've often thought, because I get so inspired by everything around me, I've often just wondered what would happen if I traveled and, you know, saw different cultures and stuff. Like, I just feel like my head would probably, my creative brain would just, like, explode with just all the things that would come out of it.
It's pretty consistent that way. Yeah. Every time that I've traveled, I've come back just with a whole nother level of energy.
Yeah.
And it opens up doors, you know, in the creative process that are just not available otherwise, I think, for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I just had a question and now I have forgotten. Oh, I was going to ask you, do you support yourself as an artist? Because that's one of the things that we talk about on my show is art and the business of art. Do you support yourself as an artist or do you have a day job?
No, that's my career. And it has been... for coming up on 20 years now. So I've been painting full-time since, well, at least, I don't know, 17 years minimum.
Wow.
I don't know, somewhere, you know.
Was it like right after high school? Like, have you had any other job, or were you able to just be an artist your
life?
Oh,
yeah, no, I put in a little bit of time there. I did some bagel delivery.
Bye, Sean Siders. Thank you again.
Thanks, Sean.
Bye. He's such a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
So bagel delivery, waiter, dishwasher.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you at the McDonald's window or anything else?
No, I never did that.
Bagel delivery, though, that has a great sound to it. I love
it. It was fun.
Awesome.
I delivered pizza for a month.
I can't imagine Gabriel Mark Lipper showing up at my doorstep with a pepperoni pizza in his hand. I love the visual image of that.
I couldn't actually imagine it either for very long, so it didn't last. But,
so then you went into doing art. What was your first big break as an artist?
Actually, I think the first kind of window into the career was Blackstone Audiobooks hired me to do book covers for them.
Oh.
And... it was just a kind of an opening into, hey, you can get paid for this, and, you know, there's enough work to keep you busy.
Now, did they tell you what to paint, or did they use your paintings?
Oh, no, these were illustrations. So
like graphic art?
No, not graphic art, like James Bond book covers.
Oh, I got to go Google these.
C.S. Lewis, yeah. There was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. One of the things I notice about you as an artist is that you do seem multi-talented. Like, you don't just paint one thing. Like, it seems like you can go off in quite a few different directions. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I don't really like to focus too closely on one particular style for too long. The number one thing that drives me in painting is the creative process. And so I'm... you know, constantly trying to push myself and grow and, you know, explore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I was at a, I don't know if you remember this, but the first time I met you in person, I was at a luncheon for the Ashland Arts Center, and they had this little activity where we had to pass around a book, and we all drew a certain. I was between you and Betty LaDuc, for God's sakes, and I had to draw something.
You killed it. It was great.
I ruined it.
No, it was fantastic.
But yeah, it was like everyone was so intimidated to be sitting next to Gabriel Mark Lipper going, oh my God, because, you know, we all know your talent, and it's like, oh man. That was fun, though. I wish I took a picture of it. I wish I somehow managed to keep that, because it was really odd. That was a fun table.
It was. Yeah. I remember there was a toe or a foot involved. That was pretty good, too.
Yeah, there were some good ones. That was fun. Let's see. I think I'm going to put our next song, our first one off of the Aprilis CD on, and it's going to be the one that Sean Siders recommended, which is Sleeping Saviors. When we come back, we're going to have about 20 more minutes to talk with Gabriel Mark Lipper, and I want to talk to him about where his studio is located now, and then see if he has any tips for other artists who are trying to make a living as artists full-time rather than having a day job as well. So here is Sleeping Saviors by the Seons.
Talk through lowly whispers. Prayers a knock on the battle door. Kneel to our only saviors, fighting up in the heavens. Take the weaker, renegades and distant dreamers. Talk of how we can be saviors, bringing damage to my ears.
Thank you. us through all of heaven's doors. Yes, I do believe in the sleeping saviors, the angels who dream in the stars.
That was the Seons with that song was Sleeping Saviors, and that is off of their new CD that just came out on Saturday last week, and it's called Aprilis. So you can go to theseons.com if you're interested in more information about them. But this is Cammie with Art on the Airwaves on KSKQ 89.5 FM, and I am back on the air with Gabriel Mark Lipper. Welcome back, Gabriel.
Thanks, Cammie.
I was asking him about his art and what he's working on right now, and he was describing to me how all the pieces tie together, and you use the phrase, the decadence of our society. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. So can you describe to listeners how what this thread is between your pieces, series?
I've done a few series over the years that have been built more on kind of my personal vision of how I see the world, at least. And the first one was called Urban Legends, and it was kind of bar scene-like figurative pieces.
I saw some of those,
yeah. Yeah, so those were kind of based on Greek myths. All the titles were based on the Greek myths, which was kind of a Greco-Roman decadence of that period. I kind of parallel with the current state of society. And then the next series I did was called Thoroughbred, and it was kind of looking at the equestrian set and the kind of the social scene around that. And I chose that. I've been working a lot in Nashville at the time, and I chose that set because I was just so kind of taken by the level of opulence that it takes to, you know, keep a polo team
moving.
You know, these people are flying their horses across the world to compete.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. How do the horses get that?
Yeah,
interesting.
It's the next level. So that was what Thoroughbred kind of touched on, mostly looking at like the equestrian lifestyle more than the horses themselves, although there's definitely plenty of horses. And then this latest series I'm working on is called American Dream, and it's a similarly set group of people, but these are generally on mega yachts. And the backdrop this time, though, is a little bit more emphatic. It's usually there's, you know, whether it be a hillside that's on fire or an oil rig that's burning, but there's usually some kind of juxtaposition between the glamour of the mega yacht and then maybe the surroundings.
Oh, I love that. And that would give people so much to think about in our society.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's going to step up and put these on their wall. I like them.
Yeah.
But they're definitely food for thought.
The people with money are the ones you want.
Do I want to have that
in my home?
Well, I think there are people out there who will resonate with the work I'm doing.
And oh, definitely.
I'm excited to share it with the world. And we'll find out where they land.
Yeah. Now, do you post pictures, like process pictures or pictures when they're finished, or do you wait until the whole series is done? Or?
Sometimes, just recently on Facebook, I have a Art of Gabriel. Gabriel Mark Lipper Fine Art is Facebook. And I posted a process series on one of the pieces I'm doing. And then my website is it's functional right now, but it's going to be going through some little facelift. So that's artofgabriel.com.
And I found that yesterday when I was searching for you.
Yeah, good.
So Art of Gabriel is his website.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you, supporting yourself as an artist, where do you make most of your money from? Like, do you do commission pieces typically, or how do you do it?
I started out doing illustration, and I used to do some storyboards for, advertising and film. And then, my fine art just started to take off and mm-hmm. kind of get some footing. And I haven't really done a lot of commissions lately at all. It's mostly just, painting. And like you were speaking to the fact that I paint different things.
Yeah.
I'll paint these series like I'm talking about, but I also paint, landscapes and nudes and different, paintings that are maybe a little bit more amicable for people's living rooms. And they sell pretty well.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Do you have certain galleries that you work with, or where all is your art?
There's a Lawn Gallery, like you mentioned, in Jacksonville. That's, available by appointment. And then Hanson Howard here in town.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ashland.
In
Ashland, that's right. And then in Nashville, I show at the Reimer Gallery, mm-hmm. which is downtown in Nashville, Tennessee.
How did you get hooked up in Nashville? Do you have family there? Or?
No. I had a patron. He's a country western singer, Big Kenny from Big and Rich. I don't know if you know country.
I don't, but I'm going to go Google it.
Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. They're kind of pop country.
That's their song?
Yeah.
Wait, so what was your painting of? I want to know?
He's an art collector, Kenny is, and he was really attracted to a lot of the work I was doing.
Yeah.
And he ended up buying, well over 40 paintings. Over
40 of your paintings?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good patron.
He's a patron.
Every artist wants that type of patron.
Yeah. So there was a few years there when I was going back and forth to Nashville quite a bit, mm-hmm. and he actually hired this gallery to install my work in his home, and they met me, and
that's
how that kind of thing happens.
Nice.
That's how you end up in Nashville.
Yeah. Did you listen to country music before that, or just happen?
No, I actually had no idea at the time. Who I was meeting, and that was probably to my benefit. But
yeah, probably. I know I get nervous around celebrities, so I can see how that would be to your benefit not to know. And then where else? I think I had interrupted you on your list of galleries.
Well, I used to show in Carmel at the New Masters Gallery, mm-hmm. and in Santa Barbara at the Waterhouse Gallery. And as my style evolved, their subjects tended to be a bit more conservative than the new work I was doing, and I decided that I wanted to go toward a more kind of contemporary model for the galleries, mm-hmm. and that's where the Nashville Gallery, the Reimer, works. They have a lot of really beautiful contemporary work, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and I'm one of I think only two or three figurative artists that they carry.
Oh, interesting.
So it's kind of a different set of genres. Hanson mm-hmm. Howard's a bit like that too. It's a little bit more eclectic than the more conservative, real representational work that a lot of the other galleries would carry.
So. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now, do you, you said some of your pieces are kind of more suited for living spaces. Like, do you, in your mind when you're painting, are you thinking about what people would want to hang on their wall? Like, are you painting to that at all, or do you go back and forth?
It does occur to me that this may not be something that someone wants to hang on their wall, but yeah. I really do make an effort to follow my passion that way, mm-hmm. and kind of just be attentive to the muse. So I'm not really...
attentive to, what'd you say, the muse?
Yeah, uh-huh. yeah, mm-hmm. just, it sounds a little hokey, but I do feel called often to paint something, and I do that. I make sure that I honor that, that kind of the quiet voice.
How do you get that inspiration? Like for me, I've noticed that right before I'm falling asleep or right when I'm waking up. So I've actually, when I take time to just lay down quietly for a while at some point, like I end up getting so much more creative ideas than I do if I'm just busy working all day long. Where do you get your inspiration, or how does it come to you?
I think it does actually come through the work. A lot of times, the paintings that maybe would end up on someone's wall more readily might be one of my landscapes. And those, I usually paint those out on site. Mm-hmm. So, I'm out there painting, and that's quiet and beautiful and peaceful.
Yeah.
And that's when I get some very, different idea.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of shows up that way.
Yeah.
So a lot of times one feeds the other, or I'll be painting a nude in the studio and all of a sudden I have an idea for a bar scene. They don't really, there's not really a rhyme or reason to why it works that way.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the creative brain. I think it tends to spin in different
it
directions.
Certainly does.
and spin. I feel like Carrie sometimes the way my, it's like spinning crazy.
Yeah.
So tell us about your studio. You just moved. You used to be at the Talent Studios, I think,
right?
I kept meaning to stop and visit you, and now it's too late to visit you there, but where's your new studio?
Well, you did have 10 years.
I know. I mean, honestly, the year I kept driving by that place with that sculpture outside.
Yeah, Kevin Christman and I started that with Clifford Wilton and Phyllis Trowbridge over 10 years ago.
Wow. And they're still there.
Kevin is. Okay. Yeah. It's gone through, you know, different artists have come through. But last year, I decided I wanted to be a little closer to home. Mm-hmm. And so I, along with Inger Jorgensen mm-hmm. and Corey Kahn and Robin Forsyth and Nicole Waskat, all moved to the new studio, which we dubbed the Enclave.
And Enclave.
That's here in Ashland.
And where is it in Ashland? Is it now? Do you have hours when people can drop in and watch what you're doing, or
no?
How does your
it's a working
work?
Studio.
Okay.
So it's pretty much, you know, the place that we create, and mm-hmm. and we do have occasional open studios and shows, and you can certainly go to the website, you know, artofgabriel.com. I think there's the Enclave Ashland is maybe a Facebook link. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, there will be, you know, posts for those kind of things.
Do you do it like in at the same time as Ashland's First Friday sometimes? Seems like I saw you do that once.
We did do that once, but we got a pretty big, we've had close to 500 people.
What?
Yeah, they've been really well attended.
Southern Oregon.
Yeah, and so
shows you his talent, people.
It's definitely one of those things where I kind of would rather let First Friday be First Friday downtown and not try to split the limited amount of art connoisseurs that we have here.
Yeah, and it's quite a ways away from the downtown.
Yeah, we're
area.
Over above the Ashland Shopping Center. In the old Ashland Daily Tidings building.
Okay, I'm going to hunt that down because I'm not sure where that is. But I am going to invite myself for a visit. I think I had one set up at some point.
Yeah, you have my contact, so you know, you just dial me up anytime.
Okay, yeah, because I definitely want to see it. One of the things I like to do is to open up the question of any tips that you have for artists or entrepreneurs who are listening. So, you know, in particular, artists who are trying to figure out how to get noticed and possibly support themselves as an artist. What type of tips do you have for them?
Well, there's different levels to that as far as, you know, what you see for yourself and how you want your career to go. But the first and I think absolutely most important is that you need to be absolutely driven by the passion for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be times, absolutely, when it doesn't look like it's going to work out or add up, and the drive to create has to, you know, trump those worries and doubts.
Yeah,
and it should every time. If that's not true for you, then I would really question that career
mm-hmm.
choice.
Now, do you think the drive to create is equal with the drive to succeed, like the business side of it? Like, do you think they factor
in? So the other part
of
that, I mean, and it's obviously it's a changing world, but I do think that, you know, having your feet in a metropolitan area is important, and especially I'm saying that here in Ashland because as I'm growing, my career's been good. But, you know, had I moved to New York early on, I think I would have had a different experience as far as what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The successes and connections that you can make are certainly, it's just a lot harder to make those when there's not as many people.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense. But do you think it's changing somewhat with the way our world is changing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the internet allows for a lot of exposure in ways that have never been possible before.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I wonder about the whole kind of dynamic, the gallery museum dynamic, mm-hmm. you know, with all of these visual opportunities for people. The question, I guess, is, you know, do we want to see these paintings in person Yeah. You know, is that even relevant anymore, or is it better to just look at them on your phone?
See, I keep thinking about that because it seems like so many galleries are closing.
Yeah.
It seems like whenever I go to a place and I want to go and, you know, look at the art and see the galleries and meet people, it just seems like there's less galleries than there used to be. And I know that's true here in Ashland.
Certainly.
And yet, like with my pieces, a big part of my artwork is the texture.
Right.
So people will often say, oh my God, there's so much better in person. You know, they're good online, but they're so much better in person. So how, you know, it's interesting because I found myself thinking about that. How do people buy art nowadays?
Yeah. And you know, there's a million different philosophies on that. One, you'll notice, you know, if you're following the markets, that like the high-end art is just exploding.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about people generally, you know, who are dead.
And
accredited, you know, in museums.
Yeah.
And there's some exceptions to that, but not too many. And then the other version of that is this much more kind of commercialized and quick and small art that is, you know, internet ready. So you find things that are like $100, you know, maybe $200.
Yeah.
And that's just not even in the realm of what I would do because I don't want to end up on a production line,
mm-hmm.
and I see a lot of that happening too. There's this sense of like creating the, you know, there's the painting a day kind of
yes.
explosion. There's a lot, and I respect a lot of these artists. It's not that they aren't fantastic. It's just not the way that I work.
Yeah. So you have to know, how you work. What else do we want to talk about today? We only have about 5 more minutes with Gabriel Mark Lipper. What were we going to talk about? I was thinking of asking you, what do you have on the horizon? But we kind of talked about how you're working on things. Do you want to address that?
Well, usually I do have a few paintings going at once. So like right now I'm working on, I think, probably about a half a dozen paintings. And several of them are for this new series, American Dream. And then, you know, on an aside, there's a whole batch of work that are going to be these little very loose, kind of impressionistic, figurative nudes. That's for a kind of closer to the market we were just talking about. They're
mm-hmm.
they're 5x7, you know, it's tiny little.
So they're little paintings that you do in oil?
Yeah. And they're not detailed. They're really gestural, fun, you know, colorful. Whereas the, you know, American Dream series is, you know, 30 inches by 90 inches is one, and the other one's 40 by 60. They're fairly larger scale.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like to, that's what I kind of mean by one feeds the other.
Mm-hmm.
I go back and forth. I oscillate between, you know, a project that has parameters and is more concrete and then something that's just maybe a little bit more frivolous and like an exercise.
Yeah. When you were describing the size of your large scale pieces, I was thinking of the picture that you have right now. It's your homepage on your website, and you're standing in front of this huge canvas in your studio. Is that the studio you have now, or is that the
talent
one?
Talent Studios.
I thought it was because I'd seen it before. How hard is it to paint the large scale paintings? Because I love doing that, and mine are not as big as yours. Like, my large-scale ones are 4 feet by 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because they make such a greater impact. But they are work to paint them.
Absolutely.
it's physical labor being an artist at times, or to hang them.
I was just going to say that's what they take. They take energy.
Yeah.
You know, it really takes, it's a visceral exercise to put that much paint down, to cover that much ground.
Yeah.
I just finished a series called Faces, which is actually on display at a lawn gallery in Jacksonville.
It's
East Main, which is not the main street in Jacksonville. That's California, but East Main. And those are 4 foot by 4 foot faces. They're big faces. And they're very gestural, a lot of paint. There was a really exciting series to do. And so I just finished that up a couple months ago, and that's up at a lawn right now. So I like to work big. I've been really exploring that.
Yeah.
And breaking out the big brushes and moving a lot of paint around.
Yeah.
My paints are in caulking guns. They're big.
What?
Yeah. Large.
I've never seen anyone do that. So what, you like squirted on?
No. That's just how I buy them. That's how I buy them.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a way of getting a lot of paint at your fingertips.
Oh, interesting. Well, you wouldn't have to squeeze those little tubes, which can be a pain sometimes.
Well, and then when you squeeze them and they're gone, you feel like, oh, there I went. So this way just takes some of the sting out.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I like the way you're thinking. That's that's very smart. Let's close with one more question. And I was just thinking of one, and it just totally escaped my brain. I don't know why that's happening today. I think it's because there's so many questions that I would like to ask Gabriel. One of the things that I notice the most about your art is your figures, because for most of us, it is so difficult to draw the human body. And I know when I was younger, like taking college classes and stuff, I really myself wanted to focus on the human body, because it's such a way of getting emotion into your piece, because there's that recognizable, you're trying to figure out what that person's thinking and stuff. Why do you gravitate towards the human body or faces, in your realistic paintings, and how the heck are you so good at it?
Well, I mean, I think you did touch on it. I think it's so relatable. Mm-hmm. We're all human. For the most part. I think there's maybe a candidate or two out there that are questionable.
I was questioning myself when you said that.
I think that's the connection that it's universal, that we all can relate on a basic level to that humanity. And that's what is intriguing to me. That's to me, that's the most intriguing thing.
And how are you so good at it? Is it practice? Did it come naturally?
It's a little bit of both. It's definitely motivation. I've always drawn people. Mm-hmm. And I had a great classical education. Simeon Bilmes is a classically trained Russian, so he had a really formal education that way, and that's who I studied under. And then beyond that, I just I paint every day, all the time.
There you go. Well, all of my art teachers, I think pretty much everyone I had us do like a sketchbook where we did something every single day, and they said that's how you train your brain to work that way.
Yeah, I've got a little assignment for any of you who are out there wanting to learn how to paint representationally. Grab a sketchbook and do 5-minute sketches. It doesn't have to be more, but 20 of them a week. It's not a ton, but 25-minute sketches a week. If you do 10 minutes, it's still just one sketch. But 5-minute sketches, 20 of them a week, it'll change your life. You get through a couple sketchbooks like that, and try to draw from life. Go to coffee shops, be that creepy guy in the corner.